Are you ready to live a more meaningful and passionate life? Through the principles of heart living, you'll delve into new theories, discover life wisdom, and achieve greater balance. Become inspired. Tune in to Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, international life coach and practitioner who's helped thousands transform their lives. Part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network, Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff will lead you on a remarkable journey of the heart.
Welcome to the Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff show. I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, your host. You're listening to a live Dream Vision 7 radio network broadcast at 1510 AM, WMEX Boston, heard live every first Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also tune into my show on the Dream Vision 7 radio network every Wednesday at 2 p.m. and 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. To learn more and for a full station broadcast schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Our topic is your parents and you, the impact of that relationship on your life. On today's show, we'll discuss the family, and we'll talk about how it really is a system. So I call it the family system, and the impact that certain types of families and certain types of parenting might have on the children in those families will also be considered and discussed. You know, obviously, we were all a child in a family at some point, and many of us may be parents now. So my hope is that this show will shed some light on how the relationship the child holds with his or her parents affects that child's life. And really, of course, my intention is always to help you understand more about your own dynamics, your life dynamics, so in this case, family dynamics, and how those dynamics affect your other relationships as well. Because, you know, how your relationship with your parents may have affected you and other important life relationships is something that each of us should consider. And I've really found this understanding to be most helpful for my clients. Oftentimes, a relationship issue will come up, for example, in an intimate relationship, partnership, work relationship, and so on. And you can look back at what were the original dynamics that you, or beliefs, for example, that you held to be true. So this is the type of thing we're looking for tonight. Now, to get started, I want to go back to that understanding of what we mean by family. So, you know, family is a word that we use very loosely, but it is a word that defines more than just a collection of related people. Because a family, as I had mentioned before, I consider to be really a system. So it's a group of people who interconnect, and each person in the family, you know, each of these people affects the others in profound and often in hidden ways. So it actually becomes not only a system, but a complex network. So I think it's important to go over some important points about the impact of the family on the child as we begin our discussion. So that's kind of where I'm going to start. Now, for all of us, and you can think about yourself as we go tonight, your family constituted your entire reality when you were young. Okay? So your whole reality was based upon what was going on in that family for many of us. And, or another way to say it is that your family system taught you how to see the world. This family system was your introduction to the world. And we all know that our family, of course, held what are called family beliefs. And those beliefs could have been spoken, but I have to say, and I know you know this to be true too, that a lot of beliefs weren't spoken. You just knew them. So, you know, spoken or unspoken. But either way, those beliefs can affect you even now, much later in life. And again, these beliefs were your introduction to the world or to reality. And probably it would be more accurate to say, instead of just calling them beliefs, would be your perceptions of what was to be believed and also, you know, in turn, what you did believe. Because this could dictate many basic assumptions about life that exist right now below the level of your awareness. Some would say in perhaps your subconscious mind. And you could have been taught something or, you know, you could have been led to believe something that still impacts your life when this particular belief may, in fact, not be true. You know, it may never have been true, but you held it to be true. And just to give you some idea of what we're talking about here, you know, for example, what about your ways of handling emotion? I've had clients tell me as a child they weren't allowed to cry. So I don't know if you know, what your situation was with handling of emotion. What were you told was okay to feel or not feel or to think or not think and so on? Because this becomes a kind of underlying set of laws about life that you've probably held to be true. And then you want to look at, again, those unspoken beliefs in particular, because you see certain unspoken beliefs were implied through your parents' behaviors. And you know it's important to remember how your, let's say, how your father treated your mother, how your mother treated your father, how siblings treated one another. And we could also say, for example, an unspoken belief might be that women aren't as important as men, or that children should sacrifice themselves for their parents. Or another common one I just remembered is that to be different from the family would be bad. You know, you can't be different than what the family allows you to be. And that could even mean in terms of occupation and life, you know, some aspiration that you might have had. But a lot of what people feel ashamed about or guilty for can stem from these basic family spoken and unspoken beliefs. So I teach a workshop on this very topic, and I, of course, do a lot of coaching. But when I'm teaching a workshop about this, or I'm helping someone in coaching, I always say it's helpful for each of us to take some time at some point to think of those beliefs from our family of origin, and, you know, even an unspoken belief. And sometimes in classes I'll say, you know, what did your father say about family? What did your mother say about family? What did your father say about money? You know, money is what? Or what would your mother say? And so on. Or what would their advice be to you? And frequently people would say, well, they never said anything. But again, they didn't have to articulate it in words. You got the message inadvertently, you know, from their behavior. So again, it would be, you know, what was the belief or message that you got, and how might it be affecting your life right now? Especially, again, if it's not really, you know, something that's beneficial to you or isn't really true. So let's go back to the family system idea. So we, you know, it's a group of people who profoundly impact one another. So for this reason, then, that it's a family group that impacts one another, young children tend to idealize and in some cases even mimic their parents. And this makes it difficult to achieve a balanced view of your parents, often until much later in life, in some cases, if at all. You know, if you've idealized your mother or father, you may never really have achieved a balanced view of that person. And as a child, you know, we all needed love, we needed approval, we needed attention from our parents. And most children will do anything to get that. They really will. They'll do anything to get that love and attention and approval. And I believe in the eyes of a child that an unpredictable parent, you know, someone they can't quite be sure they're pleasing or not pleasing or getting approval from and so on, is sort of like a fearsome god in a certain kind of way, you know, because you really don't know what's going to happen with that person. You might be disapproved and not know. And when I first started studying this and learning about this and helping people, I realized how absolutely amazing the family system really is and what impact it has on the child, who, of course, later becomes the adult. Now, also as a child, if you were without your parent or if you thought you would be without your parent, so again, you know, somehow you might have thought I might be abandoned or the person might leave me, or maybe the person did leave you, then in that situation, you may have felt truly unloved and my guess is you would have felt unprotected or, you know, you might have thought, what if I don't have any, I can't be housed, you know, I don't have anywhere to go, that kind of thing. But you somehow knew you weren't going to be able to survive alone. So most individuals' greatest fear, at least greatest childhood fear, would be abandonment. And that is basically also based on research that a child's greatest fear is abandonment. So you see, you needed your parents to validate your feelings and to validate your needs. And of course, in many cases, children do not have their feelings and needs validated. But again, that doesn't mean that each of us didn't need that because, you know, of course we did. And it's also important to add one more element to this whole mix and this complexity of the family system, which is that as children, we wanted to believe that our parents were perfect. So, you know, we want to believe they're perfect and we want to believe for that reason that we're going to feel or we're going to be safe and we're going to be protected. So a lot of times we will pretend things that aren't so, but we, you know, we hope or we want to believe that they're perfect and that we're going to be safe and protected. Now, what about the role and the impact of the parent based on some of what we've already looked at? Well, basically, the parent's responsibility, of course, is to provide the basic necessities for the child you know, like food and shelter and clothing and so on, the basic necessities. And as a parent, you aren't responsible only for your child's physical needs, but you also sincerely influence their general growth and development. And certain facets of parenting and child rearing will help shape the type of adult that your child will one day become, and at the same time while helping them increase their self-awareness as a human being, you know, in this process. So again, it's this whole idea that you're helping, as a parent, you're helping shape the type of adult this child's going to become one day. And then in addition, you're helping to increase their self-awareness in the process. So that takes us into parenting styles. And I do want to look at, on this show, I'm going to talk about toxic parents and hopefully end with some tips for what we can do to be excellent parents. But in the middle of that, talk about how to heal if you didn't have such a good situation in your own family system. Okay, so what about parenting style? Well, your parenting style affects the way your child reacts to you and also to others in their lives. So if we look at some parenting styles, and we could take one that comes to my mind as an example, would be an overbearing or an authoritarian type parent, you can see that this type of parent may in fact leave little room for negotiation. You know, it's like it's my way or the highway. That can happen. And they may have every reason to believe that it should be that way, but for the child, there may feel like there's no room for negotiation. And this individual may also, and I'm not saying these are absolutes, but may be less warm. And if that is the case, the child may end up becoming either very dependent, you know, on this overbearing or authoritarian parent, or, of course, may become rebellious. So a lot of times when the parent is extreme in one capacity, the child has an extreme response, you know, of either being very dependent or being rebellious. So I think this is important for us to think about in terms of parenting styles. Now, on the other hand, a permissive parent, and again, someone who's, I guess a permissive parent, we would think somebody who mostly allows the child to make their own decisions with very few demands on the child. And what can happen in this case is, of course, that it could create a child who lacks self-control. And discipline itself, you know, the word discipline comes from the Latin word disciple, and disciple is actually Latin for to grasp. So a certain amount of discipline is not only necessary as a parent to display with the child or to set the conditions with the child, but it's also extremely important for the child because the child has a sense of where they end and begin. They actually seek a certain amount of discipline in order to feel, you know, just a sense of self-control. So, again, if there's no discipline, if it's all about permissiveness, then the child may just lack self-control. So, again, we talked about overbearing authoritarian. We talk about permissive. What about an uninvolved parent? Because I have had a few situations in my coaching of people who felt like their parents were just not involved. Now, a parent who removes themselves as an authority figure in the family, or that'd be one way to be uninvolved, or they just don't take an interest in the child's life. I've had adults who come to see me say that they felt invisible in some capacity. You know, they didn't feel like they really mattered for one reason or another. But if a parent who removes themselves, you know, as the authority figure, doesn't take an interest in the child's life, well, this type of uninvolved parent may create a child who is permissive or just also uninvolved in regard to their disposition as well. So there is a sense of, you know, if I'm invisible, then I'll be, if I grow up feeling invisible, I often enter relationships later in which, you know, it's familiar to me, so I seek people out with whom I'm invisible. So, you know, that's the effect that an uninvolved parent might have. But again, all of this can be very complex, so it's important to understand there are many, many complexities, and we're just sort of trying to understand and tap a few possibilities. Now, most of us know what an effective parenting style may be, but I think let's go ahead and focus on what could be termed primary types of what would be called toxic parents. And, of course, there are a number of different categories here. And I've based most of this on these areas on people I've worked with and what they've shared. Because certainly we have people with effective parents, but more than likely people with ineffective parents are going to come for coaching. Now, the first category I'll call absent parents or inadequate parents. It's a little different than uninvolved. It's either absent or inadequate. And I have had clients, and perhaps some of you who are listening may relate to this too, who as children were compelled to become their own parent. And it could be because their parents were unavailable or they just were inadequate. And basically, they had no one to emulate and no one to look up to. So this is, you know, more common than we think, that the parent was unavailable or inadequate. And unfortunately, the child's personal identity usually suffers as a result because they really don't have themselves mirrored back to themselves so that they can really symbolically see who they are. And maybe more important, this child is often forced to grow up too fast and too soon because they have to become their own parent. And also, this child may not only be parenting themselves, but may be forced to parent their parent. And you'll know if this fits you, you know, that you were forced perhaps to, or you felt somehow like you were your mother's mother, your father's mother, and so on, or father's father. And this often makes the child feel deficient, may even make the child feel guilty, you know, as the child becomes attached to this role that they probably don't want, but are just so completely used to. And basically, this creates, in some cases, the caretaker role, you know, the people-pleasing role, the over-functioning type of child who becomes, of course, the over-functioning caregiving adult. And parents who are self-focused, or just parents whose energies are focused on their own physical and emotional survival, what happens is they send a very powerful message to their children. And the children of these parents are often deprived of, we could say, adequate time with them, certainly have adequate attention and care. And again, as I mentioned earlier, they can really begin to feel invisible. So what do we mean by invisible? Well, they feel they aren't seen, they don't feel like they're listened to, they aren't heard. And ultimately what this boils down to is that they end up feeling like they don't really matter. You know, they're not important. Now, in turn, invisible children, as I mentioned, often become invisible adults in their relationships, and they learn to define themselves in terms of the other person's feelings and not about their, you know, not from their own feelings. I guess you could say it's as though their center of themselves is not inside themselves, it's outside themselves. So, again, people-pleasing, or I'm going to be safe if everybody around me is okay. If I can make everybody happy, then I can be happy. And so forth. Now, if the parent acts helpless and irresponsible, this is another possibility. Often the child feels protective of the parent, jumping to the parent's defense rather than focusing on their own child's needs. I have definitely had clients that this was a situation where the parent was more of a child than the child, and the child felt that the parent was helpless and irresponsible, meaning that they as a child had to be more helpful and responsible. You know, which is really sad because it robs you of your youth. Now, a second category in this toxic parent category would be controlling parents. And even though we have different kinds of categories that can overlap, because you certainly could have an inadequate and controlling parent, I'm kind of keeping those categories separate, and then, you know, you can decide in your own situation what your story was. But to go back to controlling parents, now, when we think of parents who would be called controlling, well, one type would be parents who are anxious and fearful, and it's important to know that this anxiety and fear can often create anxious and fearful responses in these parents' children. And many of these children never outgrow the need for parental control and guidance. Okay, so they feel like they constantly need the parent to control and guide them. So what happens then? Well, controlling parents who fear that they may not be needed often seek to perpetuate a sense of powerlessness in their children. You know, if I make you powerless, you're going to be dependent upon me and then I can keep controlling you. And they may encourage the child to feel inadequate and helpless even when, you know, it's drastically out of sync with reality. Like the child's not inadequate and the child's not helpless. But they could feel that way because, again, it keeps the parent in control. So, you know, back to the idea that really it takes the child's power from them. And as the child grows older, what can threaten this type of parent is also the child's marriage to someone. I have had clients who say that with a very controlling mother or father, that they felt when they were, you know, engaged to be married, this type of thing, that they felt like they had this loyalty decision to make. And if the parent is insecure enough, which is another reason they may be very controlling, they may try to force the adult child to choose between them or the husband or wife, you know, the spouse of their child. And I've seriously seen this happen in my coaching practice over the years. Of course, my client who's experienced this type of parent is seeking to figure out a way to deal with it all, and it makes a very complex picture for them. And as one of my clients told me, she said she felt like her mother saw her spouse, her new spouse, as a competitor for the devotion that she'd always given to her mother. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but that was her story. And you see, to continue, toxic parents who are authoritative tend to see rebellion in their children as something against the family order and the family rules. And they may, in fact, if they're really controlling, see something like this as a personal attack. They might even defend themselves by reinforcing the child's dependence and helplessness. So I'm hoping, as you hear this, this makes sense, because this is truly how it can be. Because controlling parents are often manipulative. And again, I found that one of the ways they manipulate is to spread guilt as a form of control. And holidays, for example, tend to intensify this. And of course, here we are coming up on holidays. So it's time for a break right now, and I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, your host for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, live with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, 1510 AM WMEX Boston. Our topic, we'll be back after the break with further tips on your parents and you. And during the second part of the show, you could call in 617-237-1234, 866-338-9663. Thank you for listening.
Are you ready to live a more meaningful and passionate life? Through the principles of heart living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, international life coach and energy medicine practitioner, you'll delve into new theories, discover life wisdom, and achieve greater balance. Become inspired. Connect with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff through her Dream Vision 7 radio show, Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff. Visit Cynthia's website at heartliving.com and like her Facebook page at facebook.com/heartliving for inspiration and guidance. Cynthia has helped thousands transform their lives. Let her lead you on a remarkable journey of the heart.
J.T. Lewis is the big brother of Jesse Lewis, who died in Sandy Hook Elementary on December 14, 2012, while saving the lives of nine of his classmates. J.T. found comfort after Rwandan orphan genocide survivors reached out to him from their country to express their condolences and share their personal stories of tragedy and healing. Inspired by the love that was shown to him, J.T. started Newtown Helps Africa, a nonprofit organization that helps young people in Africa and beyond who've suffered personal tragedy and have shown resilience. He successfully sent one young Rwandan woman to college for 4 years and plans to do much more, all the while inspiring many young people around the world to turn hardship into an opportunity to make the world a better place. Link on to NewtownHelpsRwanda.org.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bovee on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Join us on Creating a Spirited Life with Janet Kesenick the third Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. We'll explore the day-to-day moments that puzzle, enlighten, and bring us into deeper connection with our best selves. Find meaning, purpose, and humor while creating a spirited life. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Tune in every first Sunday at 6 p.m. for maximum success, the Coach Brew Show. You'll learn success strategies to take your game to the next level from performance consultant John Brubaker. Maximum Success explores why winners win and teaches you the keys to peak performance. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Life. We can either be bystanders or creators. Now is the time to awaken to your divine identity and the power of the I Am within to create a joyous and fulfilled life, no matter what your circumstances are. There are answers to life's big questions, and there is a spiritual path that leads to soul liberation and ascension. Join us every third Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for Prophets for the New Age with Carl and Nancy Showalter on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Radio live broadcast here at 1510 AM WMEX Radio Boston. I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, host of Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, and our topic is your parents and you. You can call in during this part of the show by calling the local number 617-237-1234 or toll free 866-338-9663. So before we took the break, we were talking about a category that I called controlling parents. And I wanted to mention one more point about that, and that is if you have a dynamic in which you have controlling parents who have more than one child, they might enlist one child against the other for what I like to call a divide-and-conquer type of technique at gaining power. And you may have experienced this if this was your situation. So let's go on and move to the third category. And again, the first category that we talked about were inadequate or absent parents, then controlling parents, and this category is narcissistic parents. So I do understand that people can overlap categories, but I'm going to, again, keep them separate just to understand the basis of these words, so narcissistic parents. Now, narcissistic parents describe parents whose focus is generally entirely on themselves and what is best for them, whether they admit that this is what they're doing or not, and their focus, because it's not on the child, or if it is on the child, it's on how the child might be determined or seen as an extension of them or a reflection of them. So it puts a lot of pressure on the child if the child is, you know, for the role of the child, it puts a lot of pressure. And often this type of parent expects you to drop what you're doing and attend to them. And they may even use your possessions. I've actually had clients tell me that you know, their parents were so narcissistic, they used the child's possessions without asking, and I'm talking about when they were older, or just entered their room without asking any permission, even when they were much older, or knocking, and so on. And they might also get angry when you don't do as they ask you to do. So if you have parents like this, you'll recognize some of these descriptions. Narcissistic parents may also try to control what you do and say, since they may see this as a reflection on them. So again, it's like you're an extension of them in a sense. So what we're talking about is that they often create boundary violations and also have what would be termed an over-controlling kind of behavior. And another important feature is that they usually need you to nurture and mirror them rather than the other way around, you know, even when you're the child. And you may have grown up being invisible, like we said earlier, or feel like you had to be a mirror for them. And this can develop in you a pattern of relating to others rather than as a separate, what might be seen as worthy individual. You know, you're more an extension of another person, or you've got to be acting in relationship to the other person rather than in relationship to yourself. So again, narcissistic parents might make you feel that you're invisible, that you don't exist, except in relationship to how you're attending to them or reflecting them. So, you know, if that's your situation, if you had that type of parent, it'll be familiar to you. Now, another category, and of course it's important with toxic parents, would be alcoholic or addictive parents. And I've worked with quite a few clients whose parents fit this category, and I have so much compassion for all my clients, and especially for what those who had these kinds of parents have been through. Because you see, children of alcoholic parents are usually forced to protect the secret of the alcoholism in order to keep the family intact. And the alcoholic parent's denial, which is often the case of his or her alcoholism, can be really terrifying and also, of course, humiliating to the child. So you can think of it like the family creates, I guess you'd call it a charade of the normal family that each member silently agrees to protect. You know, so I'll protect this whole idea that we have this normal family, even though, of course, I know that, you know, my mother's drinking or my father's drinking. And this charade is especially damaging to the child since it forces the child to deny the validity of their own feelings. And I guess another thing that, you know, just occurred to me, it's also not just their feelings, but their perceptions. You know, so I have to deny the validity of how I feel and also how I'm perceiving things to be. Now, if the alcoholic parent is emotionally toxic as well, let's say this is a rageful person, abusive person, angry person, and so on, the child can develop an emotional, an emotional invisibility in order to feel safe. So this emotional invisibility would be a safe haven from the violence that some of my clients have told me that they've encountered. You know, it's almost like if I disappear, I can't be harmed, so I won't rock any boats. People who go through this or have gone through this, if this would be your case, you know that you've probably developed a hypervigilance. You know, I'm always kind of checking my back, making sure this is going to happen, that's going to happen. And unfortunately, there's a low-grade fever of fear that's often associated with that. Now, the drinking parent generally steals the child's role. Because if you think about it, the child should be able to be needy and so forth, but the parent steals this child's role because of their own needy and irrational behavior. You could say it's like the parent, in a sense, becomes the child. And another feature of the alcoholic or addictive parent's child is that the child can confuse love with abuse. You know, children of alcoholics are often distrustful of becoming close to another person since they've learned that the people who love them, if this were the case, if there were an abusive alcoholic parent, that the people who love them may hurt them or, you know, may be unpredictable. And another version, which is quite different, is also that some children of alcoholics can be cast in the role of a golden child. And once in a while, a child of an alcoholic ends up having to be some kind of a family hero, you know, or a super achiever to keep everything together, make sure that, I know one client of mine said that, you know, he got up in the morning, he made sure his mom got to work, and then he got himself to school. So, you know, he was really like a little family hero. And this child often assumes tremendous parental responsibility and might try to achieve very ambitious goals of perfection, certainly in the childhood situation, but of course even later in life. Like, I have to be perfect. I have to be an intense overfunctioner in order to feel alive. That's what makes the person feel alive. And I believe what research in this area shows is that in the alcoholic family, most often one parent is a drinker and the other is not. And I know there are exceptions to that, but that's more the norm. And the non-drinker often, unfortunately, protects or enables unconsciously the drinker. Okay, so another category we have is verbal abusers. And what happens in this situation? Well, what causes parents to verbally abuse a child? You know, parents who are verbally abusive are often insecure, and this is believed to cause them to openly criticize their child. And how sad that is. Verbal abusers often couch the abuse in terms that they're trying to help the child by criticizing him or her. And, of course, we know that's absolutely not true, but an insecure parent often has been noted to say that, you know, they're doing something to help the child by criticizing them. And in a lot of cases, I think an insecure parent may also feel competitive with the child. And I think I've seen this in my own clients, particularly they've reported it during adolescence where they felt like a parent became competitive with them. And the children of competitive parents who do excel, you know, those children sometimes can even feel guilty no matter what they do achieve. And they may even control their guilt by unconsciously limiting themselves so they don't outperform their parents. As sad as that sounds, it's true. And ultimately, a child who has an abusive parent often unconsciously chooses an abusive partner because what do? They try to correct the partner. You know, doesn't that make sense? You see, as an adult, they may try to get the partner to do what they could not get the parent to do, whether that's to treat them differently, to love them like the parent never did, and so on. And some verbal abusers are perfectionistic parents who use the child as a scapegoat, we could say, for their own feelings of imperfection. So again, we talked before, these are complex systems in a family. And while children can be damaged by these put-downs from anyone, they really are most vulnerable to and damaged by the people who are their parents. And of course, you know, that makes sense. So another category is physical abusers. And this is our last category of toxic parents that I'll be covering, but I want to do this before our break. Physical abusers generally fit a profile, and research shows they lack impulse control. You know, in other words, they use physical abuse to discharge their own strong negative feelings, and they are often unaware of the consequences on their children. And, of course, many times they were physically abused themselves. So basically, violence was the tool they learned to use when dealing with anger. And, you know, the bottom line is emotionally, these adults are really just children themselves. Now, it's time for a break. I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, your host for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, live with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, 1510 AM WMEX Boston. We'll be back for further tips on your parents and you. Thank you for listening.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Invite the Kids for Love Project, an enrichment program, into your school, classroom, or wellness center. Kids for Love Project is focused on teaching kids unconditional love for self and others. The project is a journey into self-discovery. It consists of fun, creative tools to learn self-love, like I choose love, I am love, I stand in love, and utilizing one's energies with reconnective healing and tuning into one's intuition for inner guidance, plus connecting to our natural surroundings. Kids who hold love for self do not bully or harm others. Let's cultivate a kinder world that holds compassion for all. Teaching the power of love to our kids is the way. To learn more or to bring Kids for Love Project to your school, contact Deborah Beauvais, 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to our Kids for Love Project on Facebook.
Are you ready to live a more meaningful and passionate life? Through the principles of Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, International Life Coach and Energy Medicine Practitioner, you'll delve into new theories, discover life wisdom, and achieve greater balance. Become inspired. Connect with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff through her Dream Vision 7 radio show, Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff. Visit Cynthia's website at heartliving.com and like her Facebook page at facebook.com/heartliving for inspiration and guidance. Cynthia has helped thousands transform their lives. Let her lead you on a remarkable journey of the heart.
Join the Mind Health Coach with Leah Marie every fourth Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Come explore with us natural and healthy ways to achieve inner peace, happiness, and an ever-present state of well-being. You're already healed. You just haven't realized it yet. When you're ready, you can change your mind and change your life forever. The power of a beautiful life is within you today. Mind Health Coach with Leah Marie is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
The Dream Vision 7 Radio Network presents Kids for Love. Join Deborah Beauvais and her young co-hosts and celebrate kids making a difference. We invite other kids to join in for spirited conversation filled with creative ideas and possibilities to start your own mission. Let's raise the bar together and cultivate a kinder world by getting inspired to help others in need. Kids for Love Project, celebrating kids that empower others. Callers into the show are in a drawing. It's every first Saturday at 2 p.m.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Okay, so physical abusers as parents, and I want to hit just a few more points about that before we actually get into things. But do welcome back. You're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast here at 1510 AM, WMEX Radio Boston, and I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, host of Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, and our topic this evening is your parents and you. So back to this concept of physical abusers, you know, the bottom line, emotionally, I had mentioned before, these adults are really children who abuse their children. And it's important to understand that patterns operate around physical abuse. In most cases, physical abuse, if you know much about it, it often has a honeymoon phase. You know, the abuser often tries to connect more closely with the abused after the incident. So the child's physically abused, and then this sort of love honeymoon phase comes in after that, which makes it gets extremely confusing for the child. And very sadly, in cases of physical abuse that involve incest, the child's betrayed really at the very heart of childhood, you know, at the heart of their innocence. So, you know, certainly very, very sad. And there's so many ways in which toxic parenting styles can affect an innocent child. So, you know, one of the ways when I'm teaching this topic, I talk about how do toxic parents cope with what they're doing. Well, I should say, what are some common phrases or ways that play out in the family dynamics? Well, sometimes they just use denial. You know, nothing's wrong or this won't happen again if something does happen. Or they use projection. Parents may accuse the child of the inadequacies that actually the parents are suffering from themselves. Or if a parent is severely dysfunctional, other family members may rescue and caretake that parent, as we talked about, especially with alcohol or addictive parents. And there's also what's called triangulating. Now, that's another method, but basically one parent may enlist the child as a confidant or ally against the other parent. I don't know, again, if that's ever been the case with anybody who's listening. But as mentioned, in alcoholic families, there may also be the dysfunction of keeping secrets. You know, families can be turned into almost private little clubs, and no outsiders are admitted into the club. The club, you know, exists for the people in the family who have their secrets. So what is it that you can do to heal if any of this was your situation? Well, first you can challenge your current beliefs about life. You know, if you can change your awareness about what happened or understand it from a different perspective, if there was a family secret, know that it's okay to talk about it with the right people to understand better and to get help and assistance in healing. Then you can change how you feel about those old difficulties or that trauma. And it helps to figure out what happened, what you really needed and maybe didn't get. And I say that because then you can say to yourself, you know, this is what I need to give myself now. And you really would want to challenge your beliefs about the past and in that way figure out what you want to hold on to now or let go of. To do this, you can evaluate what's truly freeing for you right now or limiting for you. And once you understand if something that happened before is limiting you now, well, of course, you can figure it out and choose a different way. I always feel like, you know, if the saying goes, change your mind, change your life. And you see, gaining emotional independence doesn't necessarily mean that you have to cut yourself off from your parents today, although it may mean that, but it doesn't have to. It may be that you have to find supportive individuals and groups that support your separateness and your sense of ability to self-define, you know, to get a self-definition. So let me break down just a few steps that might help you to do this. Well, first of all, you could give yourself permission to be angry about something that happened to you in the past without judging your feelings. And if you are angry, you can externalize your anger to release it from your body. Therapists often recommend that you pound pillows, you know, yell at a photograph, have an imaginary dialogue to voice your feelings. You can also increase your physical activity, get into a flow to get you unstuck, whether that's exercising or uncluttering. And if your pattern is to freeze up when your old feelings, especially of anger or sadness, present, well, you want to get in the flow of moving rather than freezing up. You want to express and release these feelings. And it is okay to feel sad about what you didn't have. Another option is to confront your parents about what happened. Now, I do think you have to weigh this out. I have certainly known that some people have not gotten from that what they hope to gain. So you want to think it through before doing this. You don't want to, like, wound yourself by doing that. And I'll mention more about that in a moment. You know, one important reason to confront a person who's abused you is that some psychologists believe that what you don't confront, you may be engaging in or taking out on another person. But to confront your parent, you have to feel strong enough to handle what might be the outcome. I mean, they may deny, they may blame, they may get angry with you, or there just may be some negative consequences of doing that confronting. So, you know, you need to be aware of that. Some people find letter writing. So you could write a letter to your parents, whether you ever send it or not, in which you say, you know, I'm going to say some things to you I've never said before. And in classes, I've had people write a letter. Again, they often don't send it all, but it's sort of a letter of, this is what happened to me, this is how I felt about it at the time, this is how it's affected my life, this is what I need now. It could even be a letter to yourself, just to be clear. And you can, of course, besides letter writing, you can engage in face-to-face confrontation. So prepare yourself carefully if you do that for what you need to say and also for what might be the response to it. You know, remember above all that you will promise yourself that you cannot do this wrong, since doing it in itself is a key to healing because it takes so much courage to do that. Now, if a parent has passed on, and I had one client where this was the case, she was severely abused by a parent who passed on, and she literally went to the graveside and had a talk with her mother, and that was very, very healing for her. So this impact, you know, of the parents on us, well, throughout your life, you're going to attract what you know, and this could mean attracting individuals who are like your parents in an effort to heal what occurred. And this attraction could be closely attached to childhood survival mechanisms. So I always have my clients look at, you know, what might have been a childhood survival mechanism. Now, earlier when I was talking about the child of an alcoholic, often the mechanism is, I'm going to be hypervigilant. You know, I'm going to really be checking everything out. Well, if that's a childhood survival mechanism, most likely, as an adult, the person's still checking it all out, you know, waiting for the other shoe to fall and that kind of thing. So you do want to look at what were my childhood survival mechanisms. Did you have to remain invisible? Are you still remaining invisible? Were you an excessive caregiver of one of your parents? Are you still doing that, you know, an over-functioner? Someone told me recently in a coaching, she said, I was never allowed to have a need. And that's why in her marriage, it's very hard for her to believe that she can express or have a need. Now, of course, she has needs and feels angry that her needs aren't being addressed or met. But it's just that, you know, she doesn't feel she's ever given voice to them because that wasn't allowed. So you see, your mental screen filters out people and situations according to this criteria that it could filter out candidates. It could filter out people that include, you know, someone with a strong similarity to or strong difference from one of your parents. So that's another thing to think about. And what's interesting to note is that a familiar relationship, whether it's healthy or not, often makes a person feel safer because, I mean, you just know how to function in that environment. Doesn't make it a healthy environment, but at least you know how to function in it. And you may be more apt to remain for that reason in an abusive or dysfunctional relationship than to leave it because, you know, again, it's familiar and because you know what's expected of you, even if it's a terribly painful situation. And that's, you know, again, what makes it so sad. And I also want to add, you have to remember that you're only half of the mix. So in your relationships, if you have a certain let's say, attraction to someone or a safety program operating. Well, guess what? Your partner also has some kind of similar survival criteria, you know? So it's not just you. You're also only half of the equation here. So ultimately, I would say the key to healing is going to be to gain enough awareness, and I call it hold a witness viewpoint or try to get a bigger picture of everything that occurred so that you can begin to reprogram yourself and figure out if something's not working to let go of it or to bring in what is, you know, what you need. And to reprogram yourself, of course, you've got to look at some basic beliefs about yourself and some basic beliefs about the world. And your whole life really is controlled, excuse me, and colored by these basic beliefs. So remember, your beliefs are totally related to your fears. So again, then working through your fears would be a key. And finally, reprogramming might involve doing some kind of individual or group work to build awareness. Now, this could be taking classes, going into counseling or coaching, but basically looking at your beliefs and what you think is working and not working for you. You can also tape or write messages to yourself that you check out or play back to yourself to remind you of new concepts. I call it hold conscious intent. Hypnotherapy can be great to reprogram your subconscious mind, you know, in order to reprogram some of those negative subconscious beliefs. But you really want to let go of anything that perpetuates some old belief system that isn't helpful, you know, something that was not, it doesn't really work for you any longer, even if it never worked for you. And performing some kind of daily ritual for holding that conscious intent to the new idea, the new feeling, would be fantastic to do to start to effect a change. And I found in my teaching and coaching that it's helpful for people also to look at their parents' relationships to one another, you know, and their own joint and individual relationship with each parent. And is what you did then, what you're doing now, did it work then? Is it working now? Because, again, all of this, asking yourself helpful questions would be so important to either end a pattern that isn't working or at least challenge a pattern that isn't working. Now, if you are a parent, hopefully these toxic patterns are not something that is a part of your family system. And I would say also that you as a parent, you can certainly do many things like ask your children about their day, be involved in their life. But just some really basic principles about parenting that I always say are important to remember are, you know, first of all, you cannot be too loving, seriously. And what we often think of as the product of spoiling a child is never the result of showing a child too much love. Usually when the child's spoiled, that you've given them something in place of love, you know, like you've lowered expectations or given them a lot of material possessions. We're not talking about that. We're talking about being sincerely interested in that child. And remember also that what you do in that relationship with the child really matters. How you treat and respond to your child should come from an awareness in yourself of what you want to accomplish and help that child to accomplish in life. You want to be involved in your child's life and make your child a priority. And despite any differences, you really want to be sure to establish and set rules, be consistent, but most of all, treat your child with respect and set the expectation that, of course, you're going to ask for respect as well, because that allows that child to grow up in a world and be a respectful person. So, you know, you're not responsible for what your parents did to you. They are, but you are responsible for what you are doing with your life right now. You know, your parents aren't. So as we begin to close our show this evening, I want to thank you for tuning in. It was such a pleasure to spend this hour with you. And I encourage you to go to my website, heartliving.com, to learn about a couple of workshops that I'll be holding, one in March and one in May of this 2015. If you like my Facebook page, you'll hear more about these shows that are coming, these classes. And again, thank you so much for listening, and promise yourself that you will practice heart living by living your life with passion and purpose. I'm looking forward to our next program. I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, your host for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, live with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, 1510 AM WMEX Boston. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff. Join us the first Sunday evening of every month at 7 p.m. to explore ways to live a more inspired and passionate life. Gain clarity, balance, and purpose as Cynthia guides you on an enlightening journey of personal transformation. For more information, find Cynthia at her website, heartliving.com, or on Facebook, facebook.com/heartliving.